Welcome to A Course in Miracles.
Not yet.
No.
The world's light blinds us from the spiritual light. That's the whole issue. That's our whole task. The Course in Miracles is to get off the drug. It's the world. And it's promises that the world has. Is to get off of that drug. Pull out the needle. Put the bottle down. Of the ego. Loaded with promises. So the section we're talking about right now, the major section, is called The Obstacles to Peace. Course in Miracles is drilling in on the things that we do voluntarily that block peace from our every moment. The Course is talking about the things that we are addicted to because we believe they work, that block peace from being the natural condition that it is. Peace was given us in our creation. But peace, it turns out, for this world, is quite inconvenient in some circumstances, is it not? Are there times it does not pay, according to the ego, to be peaceful? If you want to really win the argument with some force, now's not the time for peace. Grit the teeth. Show some color. And you will win, says the ego. But there are others.
Yeah, in the old days, raise your voice to win the argument.
Yeah.
Who talks the loudest? And then after, now it's like, who cares?
Yeah, and before you could actually win something that way a lot of the times, but then it turns out you lost more than you won.
Yeah, and I was like, what do you lose by that? It's like,
what did I win?
You have this argument, you don't even know what the heck it was about.
The person stopped talking, so you got your way, but they lost their way, and they lost something with you in that moment. And the special relationship began to cost more. So, we talked about the desire to get rid of peace for those circumstances. Then we talked about the attraction to guilt, which took us about 6 weeks to do the first paragraph. How important is that to A Course in Miracles to understand the fundamentals there? The attraction to guilt. Guilt is a coin of the world. If I can make you guilty, I look good. If something's wrong and you did it, and I can say that you did it, and you can agree that you did it, you're going to somehow thank me and apologize to me, as you now owe me. Guilt is this coin of the ego.
Can I say something? No. If I win an argument, I feel guilty because I made the other person feel bad by losing.
Aha. Uh-huh. Indeed. Yes. Part of culture in Japan is that way, too. You get an accident, and the person that you hit... You know, Wendy lived in Japan for 2 years, and she hit somebody with her car. She drove right into the back of their car. And before she could get out, they ran out of their car, and they were bowing like this and apologizing. But for them, it's this culture thing that I have put a burden on you. Your life is burdened because I was even present. I mean, it's really guilt-ridden over there.
Wow.
But it's just better to stay out of arguments as far as I'm concerned.
It's a slippery slope with the ego. Arguing, guilt... It's a slippery slope, but it seems important. It seems necessary. Just like alcohol, once you're addicted, or whatever drug it is you have, once you're addicted, it seems to have a place. So we went through that. It was weeks and weeks. The attraction to guilt. Amazing. It's all over the book. But we really focused on it then. Now, we're starting a section that's talking about another obstacle to peace. And this is the body. It's the body for what the body offers you. And the investment we have in the body, a priori, the investment we have in the body by default, the investment we have in the body because it seems so much like you. You look in the mirror and you wave and it's the body waving back. Wow, that's got to be you. So says the world. Turns out, Everything has a home. Everything has a home, and it's related to its purpose. The home is related to its purpose. Purpose changes, home might change too. Home serves purpose, tight, stay. So, if I asked you, where is the home of the ego? It might not be too much of a stretch to say the ego's home is the body. Everything's in the mind, we all know. But where does the ego actually spend its time and its energy? At home. Let's just think about that for a little bit. Let's think about...
Say that one more time.
The home of the ego?
Yes.
The body?
Yeah, body's home of the ego.
And as I'm phrasing it, I'm contextualizing it tonight. Everything has a home, and the home serves the purpose. It serves the purpose of the thing that lives there. Okay, I'm setting it up for a discussion tonight. So let's just sit and think on that a little bit. What does the ego need a body for? And if you would, just pick something, aspect, phrase, occupation, something, where the body is nicely convenient for the ego's agenda. Just pick something that comes to mind. What's something about the body that fulfills the ego's agenda? You ready?
Well, the ego, to the ego, or body. Separate body.
Uh-huh.
The body can die.
Okay.
So that's a biggie. So now we've got to take care of this body, and you know, watch all these people out there, and they're gonna get you, and you know, all that goes on, and it just gets magnified beyond your wildest imagination. And that's how it justifies everything.
The body can die.
Yes. Whoa. Gotta be careful.
That's a game changer.
Yeah.
In here, the world that we know, when the body dies, there's nothing to wave in the mirror.
Yeah.
There's nothing to hug. How are you gonna kiss without your body?
And we got the space between everybody. Because it's the body, we create space between us. Of course, we call it time.
Uh-huh.
We think, well, you know, then don't realize that. So none of that is real. It was really trippy when I realized that, you know, what the difference between space and time, we switch them.
Right.
And our, yeah, it's like, well, the give and receive thing happens in the moment, right freaking now. It can't happen in the past or the future, or any of that. So when I really start seeing, I go, whoa, wait a second, really? I mean, that's the future. I don't know where the thought's going from back there.
Mm-hmm.
I now know that I have no idea what really happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just made
even up shit. You are not a good authority on your own past.
Yeah, I have no freaking idea. I really don't. I realize it.
Yeah.
So
one thing the body serves is that, you know, it's fragile. It could die.
Yeah.
So the ego's busy making sure that doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Stefan. What's something that's convenient with the body for the serve the ego's purposes?
Well, my body allows me to be special.
Oh, yeah.
Big to me, I mean, different.
Different.
Special. As well as, like, the whole pride thing, like, the pride that the things I can do with my body that other people can't do with theirs makes me better.
Mm. Yeah. There's a source of self-esteem, happiness, deserved of reward and love. If
it
not,
just keeps on going. It's my freedom. Because how would I get anywhere?
Uh-huh.
Without freedom. Even.
Oh, ha! Huh. You don't want to be stuck. Gets you around.
You know, I mean, being paralyzed would be worse than death.
Uh-huh. But you'd be special.
Right. Even boy, you are. I want the body so much. If the body's not working right, then, wow, that's it. Then it's over. Game over. Uh-huh. Body's not working right.
Uh-huh.
That's what's most important.
Yeah.
As long as I got my health.
Uh-huh. Pretty close to modus operandi day in, day out.
All important item.
Yeah. Well, what's something about your body is convenient for your ego's agenda?
Keeps me distracted.
Keeps you distracted.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps me distracted.
I focus on, you know, this thing, and it gets me out of my mind where things are really going on.
Mm-hmm. Where real change happens.
Yeah.
Real creation happens.
Yes.
Real God thoughts happen.
Right, and this is just a distraction. This really, you know, so this thing kind of runs me.
Mm.
If I identify with it, it runs me.
Yeah.
But it keeps you away from the source that's in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you focus on something, you know, that's like an effect but not a source.
Yeah. Speaks first, speaks loudest.
Yeah.
It has quite an ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
To distract.
Mm-hmm. But it's more than just the body, it's everything. Mm. I just picked up a Mother Jones magazine out in the waiting room, and that's just all about distraction.
Mm.
There's nothing in there that, you know, that's it just, you know, and that's egoic.
Yeah.
And also there's something about pairs of eyes. You know, it's like everyone, you know, there's like one ego, and it's, you know, there's one ego, it's one, you know, I mean, there's also individual, but there's one ego. Mm. And that one ego is everyone's pairs of eyes looking at me, keeping me in line.
Ah.
So I don't,
you know,
pop.
Yeah. Did you know they did a study that in the employee room, the employee cafeteria, you got a problem with people taking other people's lunches? You got a problem with people taking the silverware home, things like that, things disappearing from employee cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a study that says if you just put a pair of eyes on the wall, it cuts it by 50% or more. Just the eyes. That's it. Just two eyeballs.
That night that, this was months ago, where you started out with, you asked us a question, what would we do if we were standing in line at the grocery store and someone just walked in front of us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would we do?
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, then I didn't have a thought for the next day. If I were the only person in line, I wouldn't care. But if there were other pairs of eyes, that'd be, it'd be hard to ignore this person, you know, who did what they did.
Wow, it's in their context.
Because I'd be expected to, you know, to do something about
that. Isn't that interesting?
And so if I didn't do anything about that, then there must be a problem with me.
Mm.
So the ego is just this thing that's always watching.
Wow, very good.
Always watching.
Very good. Wow.
That is like
one among many defined by the many. Wow.
And that is guilt. I mean, that's like,
isn't it?
Yeah.
A busted ego right there. Thank you all. Luann, what's something that,
I don't know what the ego is, and I don't know where it came from. But what I know is it uses my body, and it sounds like probably theirs too, to give me feelings so it can control me.
Mm-hmm.
Gives me guilt, or gives me fear, or gives me shame, or gives me anger, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes me mad at it, because for me not to feel those things, I have to constantly say, what am I thinking that's causing me to feel that way right now? Mm-hmm. And I'm sick of the ego making me think that way.
Uh-huh. A self-fulfilling prophecy. And when that thought occurs, the body responds with the perfect in the gut.
For me, it's always in the gut. That's where I know I've got some feeling or other.
And then once you think about the feeling in the gut, it compounds with the thought associated with the feeling. And it makes the thought stronger, because if you feel it, it must be true.
Well, you said that before, but, you know, my feelings don't prove be true necessarily.
Well, eventually they've proved all to be false. The feelings are, especially for somebody who looks at them as deeply as you might, the feelings, they lose their foundation. But for most people, if you see something scary and you feel scared, it tends to create a cycle, a self-fulfilling cycle. I really am, this really is dangerous. I feel afraid. And I thought I was afraid, and now I, since I feel afraid and I think I'm afraid, it's worse, self-fulfilling prophecy. If you felt nothing, if you had no feeling about it whatsoever, and yet it was a knife or a gun pointed at you on the counter, nobody's hands on it, but it's dangerous just because it's there. We had a gun in here once. We showed up in the meeting, there was just a gun sitting there, a real gun. Some psychologist is probably using it for some PTSD thing, I don't know what, but they forgot it behind, and our group picked it up.
Great thing for them to do.
Yes, I know.
Except it might have been good for your lesson.
Yeah, we have to work with it a bit.
We're talking about consistency, though, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, here I'm seeing this,
yes,
and then I'm feeling this,
yes,
and I'll find things that align with it. And for me, that consistency can be the consistency. It's not the same kind of... It's consistent. Mm-hmm. I like consistent. When things align up, then I start to believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ego's making it all. I'm making it line up, but that doesn't matter. Kind of consistency reinforces itself.
It does, and it's peaceful, even if it's things like anger or fear or self-loathing or what have you. The ego will tend to look for justification and put all the pieces in a line. And then feel really shitty about themselves for a good reason. And now suddenly, well, I knew I was a... But feelings, the body supplies, it answers the call from the mind for a commitment in some direction, and what you are committed to, you're bound to feel.
Okay, so what happens for me then is when I have a feeling that lasts too long, like I did last fall, mm-hmm. and I ignored it because I knew what it was going to tell me on some level,
mm-hmm.
but if I finally go in and say, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And get down and down and down deeper. What's the worst thing about that? What's the worst thing about that?
Mm-hmm.
Et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I finally get to a place where something in me feels like it's understood, and as soon as it feels like it's understood, then I can give it compassion, and then it goes away.
Uh-huh. Funny how that is. Mm-hmm. When you can actually look at the feeling instead of only feel the feeling.
Yeah. For me, that's what saves me most of the time.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. What comes first, thought or the feeling?
Probably the thought. Yeah.
That's what we learn here.
Yeah. It's interesting what you're saying, though, about maybe honest different things. Someone knocks on my door at 3 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I'm asleep. I wake
yes.
up. What's the first... Whatever comes to my mind to start to set a pattern.
Yeah, pattern.
Because I'm already primed. If someone knocks on my door at 3 a.m., it's pretty serious. There's something going on.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then I'm primed to be an alarm when that happens, so my body's producing this alarm.
Alarm, right.
And then I'm like becoming more oriented, and then the knock's louder on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, if you're not careful, it creates this reinforcement pattern.
Yes.
So,
I think that's what is needed for that. You need mindfulness.
Okay, but the idea... that the ego can operate, it'll find reasons or justifications to continue this process.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't sound very fun, does it, to be alarmed that someone's knocking at your door. It's not positive.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're knocking louder because you didn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're becoming more alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know some people who've been through a lot of stuff,
if they've been scared in the situation before, now they don't even want to answer the door. Mm-hmm. Because their past has told them, and their body's telling them, everything is now telling them,
yes,
you don't want to answer the door.
What the Course calls shadow figures are showing up in their mind, and the imagination is filling in what's unknown. What actually, it's not unknown. It's becoming known that it's bad. And of Course in Miracles says, this is an interesting thing about Course, is it says that fear is of the known. And I think I've heard a lot of my life, fears of the unknown. Once you know something really well, you've conquered it, you know, makes some sense, right? But fear is actually of the known. If you had no clue what knocking even was, you'd think, what's that, water? Is it a water issue?
Mm-hmm.
Should we go turn the water off? Fears of the known. I know what a gunshot sounds like. You know, versus a car backfire, versus a transformer blowing, you know. My mind sorts out really quick that a bullet has been loosed in the neighborhood out over the mountains, you know.
I hear gunshots all the time and I think, oh, somebody's shooting at the Gophers.
That's good.
Well, that's an interesting.
That's what she calls them. She calls them gophers.
Very good.
Just kidding.
Is that how they control gophers?
Oh yeah, I never heard that they shoot the gophers. That's the fastest way to get rid of them.
So my dad gave me a rifle when I was, I think I was 12 years old. I live on a ranch. I said, "Go kill some gophers." Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know. It's off the top.
All right. We'll hear from Steve.
Huh?
We'll hear from. Is this Steve?
Brian.
Brian. Brian.
What's he use for the body? How does Evo use the body?
All my doing is from my frame of reference of the body. So my ego stays consumed, busy. Mm. You mentioned about lining up our facts and making things, you know, our best understanding of this, mm-hmm. right? And so it's incredibly busy. Mm. And it wants to be the monopoly on our consciousness. This is it. This is all there is.
Mm. Like Walt, it wants to be the monopoly on our consciousness, mm-hmm. and it has quite the ability to do so. Mm-hmm. Walt says, man, is this body distracting me a lot of the time. It's distracting. Mm-hmm. It wants to be a monopoly on the consciousness, and it's got all sorts of tools to do it. One of them is it can die and end
it's
it all.
Ironically, part of it.
Yeah.
The fact that it can die proves the separation.
Yeah. And before it dies, it'll feel all sorts of things to get your attention.
To keep it alive. I mean, that's it. People spend their whole life.
Yeah. To get alive.
If I may,
oh, yeah.
Bring me in.
Bring it.
So, the Course talks about remembering. We really know who and what we are, but We remembered to forget.
We chose to forget.
Right. So it's not that you didn't know.
Yeah.
It's a repression. You know, and you don't bring it up. And that's what the ego is there for. Busy yourself.
Yeah.
So fully and so completely that you forget who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very convenient to forget who you are,
right.
If your goal is
separation.
Let's leave the farm. Let's get out of Dad's home.
Mm-hmm. And the Course says we're so effective at that we can't fix ourselves. We actually need help.
This is how successful we've been.
And we're doing this with the power of God.
Yes.
So we're really good at it.
Yes. Yes. That's right.
Well, it's interesting what you said. You know, I'm trying to not be with that. And when you first said about the home of the ego,
yep.
I went to the world.
Yep.
because the body and the world, and the world can keep us very, very busy.
Yes.
Very, very distracted.
Yes.
Very, very threatened.
Waltz Magazine, just a display of the
really
world.
It's interesting how the world, where are we going to look for the truth if not out in the world?
Yes.
Or into the body? I mean,
keep going.
Because we covered up this other spot. We don't look there.
Uh-huh. Can't see it anyway.
We look.
Why would you? You can't see it with your. Why would you?
I already, you know. I get to the back of my head until some miracle happened. I'm like, whoa, that's really
weird.
Doesn't
even exist, really. Well, who's thinking about that?
But how that world operates. Now, I'm the one who's making this world operate like this.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, though, the ability to, like, I really can hear what I want to hear and see what I want to see and feel what I want to feel regardless of what may or may not.
Seems a lot like a victim to me.
But it's well, the idea that I can decide what I want to hear.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And to me it seems almost the same power. It's almost the same ability.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like that ability. If I use it that way.
It is the same ability.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, that's the irony. It's not a lesser ability. It's the same ability, but we listen to a different teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the course, the revelation in the course is that there's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Not a choice in illusions, which is really no choice,
mm-hmm.
but a true different choice,
mm-hmm.
Which is recognizing your own divinity,
mm-hmm.
which we don't. I am reluctant. I can sit here in a course of miracles, but I'm still, I'll play with that idea.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still in the world.
See, that's what we talked about last week. Remember last week? That's what we were talking about last week.
The ego is our determined refusal to look. It's like, you know, this guy over here, look into his eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I can't, I refuse to accept that. We got to nail this guy to a cross because I refuse to, I can't go there.
Yes,
it's a very active refusal to accept
that
we've done, you know, that we're guilty of making the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm, there's that,
and we're afraid to, you know,
even though it's the wrong decision, it's our favorite one.
It's,
it's the only one we know. What a bind, Walt.
Yes.
Be good to have a guide, because we're so deep into this, to have a guide that say, there, the thing that you treasure so much is nothing. You would be letting go of nothing, and you won't be asked to do that until it's comfortable. But we need to start.
And there's another word for letting go.
Uh-huh. Say it.
It's forgiveness.
The F word in A Course in Miracles.
And so it's not forgiving the wrongs people did to you.
Yes.
It's forgiving what you want this world to be.
Mm-hmm.
Or what we've done to ourselves.
Yes, we hold on white-knuckled,
mm-hmm.
You know, to what we make, how we make sense of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness
for making
yourself.
The choices we make?
No, it's not...
And the choice to stay away from God?
No, it is really what it does is, for me, what it is being trusting enough to say, God, I trust you more than what I made of the world. What I expect of the world, what I want the world to be, what I want to think I am.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow. Or God's guilty.
Well, the thing is that I can't fix myself. So the only choice is to trust God.
Whoa.
Let him, you know, let that relationship be.
So where's the F word in that?
In the course, the letting go, and you'll see it, it's used synonymously throughout the text. That it talks about forgiveness, and it talks about letting go of things. And they're the same thing. And what... The thing, what's holding on is the ego. We're holding on to our fears, our concerns, our desires, our aspirations. We're, you know, it's the work of the ego, right? And
when it's letting go, since it's the work of the ego, it's letting go of the untrue.
Right.
And we're addicted to, still, the untrue shows up in our mind. This is forgiveness's job. The miracle is where we see that the untrue is untrue. Now forgiveness is easy.
And while you use the word, it's like this willful, you know, this refusal, you know, to see, or to see the way things are, right? And you know, you use the view of looking at Christ's eye and, you know, refusing to see, nailing him to the cross, right? And really, the book talks about the crucifixion, and actually, what we're doing is crucifying ourselves. What we think we're doing there, we're actually doing to ourselves. Yeah, yeah. But that's the willful choice, you know, that refusal. And one of the words I have a hard time with in the Course is when we're talking about ego and the separation. The Course repeatedly talks about it as an attack. You know, I'm not attacking God. I'm not attacking the Holy Spirit. But that willful refusal, the willful
attacking ourselves.
But in the book, when Jesus was talking, I think I heard or read, he says, when you're attacking yourselves, you're attacking me. Because we're all one, right?
Because we're extensions.
But this book, like, the miracle of these teachings, and some books kind of do it too, but it's pretty, like, I'd Be Lost, kind of, the book comes out and says right away, you're sinless, you're holy.
Oh my goodness!
Right? You're sinless, you're holy, you're not a body. And if I don't, like, get that as the foundation of the logic stream, I don't understand any of it, because I'm starting with a different starting point. And ego has this cause and effect, the logic, and my mind will go overpower to go from this.
Yes, yes.
How important is it to me to, like, get clear about what voice am I listening to?
Very good.
What's the truth? Because if I don't start at the beginning, I do what I always have done and rarely accept through miracles.
Yes.
I'm going to operate on that foundation.
Yes.
And to tell somebody else, and I try to, no, you're sinless. Sometimes people are like, well, that's cool, but you're ready.
Yeah, right.
Body. Okay.
Yeah.
You know? You're holy. Yourself. You're perfect just like you are. Uh-huh. So, listen to, don't do that. Listen to the Holy Spirit tell you. But that difference, and you've seen it in here in this group. You've seen it with me. The introduction of those basic principles.
Yes.
Allow the growth of truth.
Yes.
But, like I say, you just can't get here from there.
Brother, I feel your pain.
And that's right.
No doubt about it.
It's not your job to fix yourself either.
And that is that's a tough one, because the ego is based on, it's me. And as long as I got that foundation, no, it's me, this ego, me thing, then I can never fix myself.
Well, the thing, I think that's where, for me, I don't understand half of what I'm reading or doing in the lessons. But it says way back at the beginning, don't worry about it, it'll get done. And so I have to say, okay, what I have, the only thing I really have, that I know I have, is faith that it's going to get me there eventually, without me. Without me.
So that would be, that's still almost completely alien thinking to me. That's the last thing my ego and I really want to know.
Yes.
That's something that I'm not really needed.
Yeah. Now, you're pretty new to the book, and so we get to rehearse some of our favorites whenever somebody relatively new shows up. But it works right in with what you are putting on the table, which is true for everybody. Until you have some pretty major miracles go on that are very personal, this is honesty that you're talking about. The only way you can be consistent is to admit that this doesn't make sense, that I'm whole and pure when I struggle every day. What's whole and pure about that? Now, I like that about you. You're not willing to roll over and lie to yourself. This is going to be your ticket out. It's because you're not willing to be sucked into some false path. Let it be real when it's real. Step by step. So, for the benefit of both of you, Turn to page 298 and look at the first sentence in the text, in paragraph 7, I think.
Yeah, it is.
298, paragraph 7. It says, you, as he clears his throat, you cannot be your guide to miracles. For it's you who made them necessary. Exactly, Stefan, what you're talking about. And exactly what you're working with in the workbook as it's revealing the particular nature of the ego as a very poor guide.
That feels true.
Yeah. So when it's recognized that it's a poor guide or a poor teacher, stop listening. Stop bringing apples to that one. Stop going to that class.
Not this class, but that.
No, actually, ego class. Yeah. So that's what this cute little section here is. Look at that. Turn back one page, 297, paragraph 6. David, you read that for us?
Do not be concerned about how you can learn a lesson so completely different. Everything.
You know what? Let's have you read paragraph 5.
Five.
To put some context on it a little further.
Okay. You have one test, as sure as God, by which to recognize if what you learned is true. You are wholly free of fear of any kind, and if all those who meet you, or even think of you, share in your perfect peace, and you can be sure that you have learned God's lesson and not your own.
This is called the test of truth, and it's titled a whole section, but that's the test of truth.
You haven't got to mark this test.
Yeah. If you have Christ's vision fully on and you came to true peace, this is the test you would pass. Great thing to meditate on how that could be possible in this world.
It's
there it is.
Kind of interesting. The first part I completely got.
Okay.
Is you're wholly free of fear of any kind.
Yes.
The second one is, oh my God, everybody else has to be free of peace of fear too.
Yes.
Before, and I have to know that.
Yeah.
That one almost seems impossible.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
On the surface it is, of course. On the surface it is, of course.
I hear you.
This book teaches with the assumption that you appeal to your right mind to understand it and not your ego mind.
Well, my ego is saying it's impossible.
Good. That's natural, and that's right for the ego.
You understand perfectly.
You understand perfectly. You're following nicely. You read the words correctly. No mistake. But somewhere along this path, your heart's been touched, your mind's been touched, an awakening has occurred with it. And you say, there's more here that I can get from this. And it's that.
What keep my reading. Heart is saying is, I want everybody to have the peace that I want.
Uh-huh.
That's what it is saying. Makes me want to cry when I say that.
Yes.
I want it so bad.
That's love. Yes. Equally, others equal as you. Yes. Yes. Well, keep reading.
Unless all this is true, there are dark lessons in your mind that hurt and hinder you and everyone around you.
And everyone around you. Doesn't that explain a possibility, huh? Let's continue.
The absence of peace,
perfect peace,
means but one thing. You think you do not, will for God's son what his father wills for him. Every dark lesson teaches this in one form or another. And each bright lesson...
What's a dark lesson? A dark lesson of maybe he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Maybe he's really a sinner.
Yeah. Some sort of attack.
There's one God should kill and leave us all alone. Take this one off the planet. Some sort of attack. Exactly. Yeah. Good.
And each bright lesson with which the Holy Spirit will replace the dark ones you do not accept teaches you that you will with the Father and His Son.
That you will with the Father and His Son. A whole different agenda for your mind. Yeah. Yeah. It's big time hints going on here at a different level of thinking than what the ego does. How the beep are we supposed to do that? Check out the next paragraph. It's highly practical. Stefan?
Do not be concerned about how you can learn a lesson so completely different from everything that you have taught yourself.
Oh, you know, big sigh of relief. Hey, don't worry about it. Thank God, because I was worrying about it. Okay, continue.
How would you know? Your part is very simple. You need only recognize that everything you learned, you do not want.
Okay, it's as simple as that. There you go. You asked, you got an answer, and now just work with that. Everything you learned, you do not want.
Oh my God, that's exactly what I think.
Is it?
I don't want what I've learned.
Nice.
I just don't know how to unlearn it.
Yeah, because as Walt discovered, it's the only choice, my favorite choice was the wrong one. It's the only one I know I've made for this world, this body. It's the only one I'm certain of, and now I know it's the wrong choice. Ugh. I'd rather not keep it. Excellent. This will make it very much, much easier.
But I'm afraid of the unknown.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And when you learn that fear is always of the known, we'll find out what it is you actually are afraid of, and there's a picture of it.
Well, say just what you said again, because what he said and what you're saying,
yes.
I mean, it's right there. It's a fear of the unknown.
Yes.
But what does known mean to you, and what does known mean to you?
Well, thank you. Did you get it?
Known is Walt. Who I am. Mm-hmm.
As a what?
As me.
You know, let's go back to the knocking on the door, as Stefan's example.
My experience.
Remember the pounding on the door?
Mm-hmm.
It's of the unknown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Let's look a level deeper. Is the pounding on the door really completely without image? All thoughts are images I have made. So it says lesson, what is 30 or 28, somewhere around there? Big lesson to recognize how you live in a body with your mind. And you make images constantly. Bang, bang, bang. And then it gets louder because you didn't answer it. Bang, bang, bang. I like that part, right? That happens. This person's angry.
No, this person is letting me use your phone, but their car broke.
You made a judgment.
It is...
I learned this lesson big time. You know the story of the dark and all that. But it is the fear of the known. We think it's the unknown. It is not.
Because we think it's something.
We've made a decision.
Yes.
And it's usually based upon our past.
Yes. There it is. There it is. We think we know something about that, and it's bad. That's why we're afraid. If
we
it was...
prove it.
What?
And we can prove it.
Yes. And we can prove it? How? Immediately? How? Like instantly? How is it proven? Is it your heart beating? Is it the gut clenching? Every time that you've been afraid, it's afraid again? Doesn't that mean it's bad? Oh my God, it's getting worse. The louder it gets. What, do you just suddenly walk up and open the door in your night robe and say, what? Who are you?
There are things that I'm afraid of, but that's not one of them.
The tricky thing is that it's easy to say the fears of the unknown, but it's not actually true when you go a level deeper. The fear only occurs because you think you know you're in trouble. You think you know there's loss. If you knew there was gain, you would not be afraid, for example. You definitely know something. And you're counseling yourself. You're instructing yourself. If there's fear.
I'm right. The knock at the door. Yes. I'm in fear. Yep. I'm correct
right.
in that. And I'm going to act on that.
Yes.
And I'm going to continue to do things to make me more right.
This, because maybe you got comfortable. It's safe if you listen to that.
Well, that's the pattern.
Yes, a pattern.
I don't want to be wrong. I want to be right until something happens differently. This is how I survive in the world. This is the
and
this
the alcoholic
this far in my life
is
my ego
back
life.
In the bar on the second drink already.
That knock I've got. I mean, I'm not answering that door now.
Uh huh.
What am I going to do?
What fool would you be?
I mean, people do things like call 911.
Uh huh.
People, me, I think more like now would be a good time to use my other door.
Uh huh.
If I keep going down that pattern, I'm going to reinforce 3 my
3 a.m. can't be good.
I'm going to back up my thought on this. I'm not going to think like, I mean, I could, but it would take a miracle.
Yeah.
Oh, take a breath. Wait a second. I have no real knowledge of what this is actually. Just step back from this. Take a breath. Slow mm-hmm. the heartbeat down. Mm-hmm. Because I know I've made all this up. What are the odds of this being anything really wrong? That ain't going to happen until I'm already dealt with.
Something has to be very different about the pattern of your life and thinking.
It ain't going to start there at 3 a.m. That's not when I'm going to get the breakthrough.
That's good. That's why we're here tonight on cushions. So we can start to make that movement in an easy space. And then when the life returns, and it will right away, we're a little more capable of not being fearful.
Yeah, when that ego, first thing happens, that ego goes off. But I've learned in here that the ego is always going to speak first.
Yes.
Take a second before I go down that path right away.
Right away.
And go, oh, who? I don't know.
The sooner the better.
I just, at most, alarm. No, I don't know.
Yep.
And that's the pause that has some chance
of
something.
So I have a story. It's not so much around fear, although kind of. So I was in Arizona visiting family, and then I was going to a work thing right after. I was supposed to leave 8 a.m. Monday to go to my work thing. And on Sunday night, I found out my flight's canceled. Sunday afternoon, actually. So I had, 18 hours or something to get it rescheduled, which is the longest I've ever had to figure that out. But instantly, I was just like, oh, the world's, it felt like the world's falling apart. What a pain in the ass. And I've got, I'm trying to just hang out with my niece and nephew, and we're supposed to go swimming. And anyway, so I start trying to figure out what to do, and then all of these options were there. I could change dates, and I could go from a different airport, and so it started to get really overwhelming. And especially, I'm just an indecisive person by nature, so suddenly all these options, I was like, ugh. And I right from the get-go, I just was like, okay, this just is what it is. I do not know what this is or why, but just try to not get riled up by it.
Mm-hmm.
And my niece and nephew, 3 and 6, they just got up from their naps and were ready to swim. I was only 5 minutes into this process. A little tug on the arm. They were like the miracle, sort of like they were bringing me the miracle in the sense that I knew what my priority was. I just wanted to go swimming with them. And if I chose to make this complicated, then I would miss all that time. And I just let go. My gut told me exactly what flight I should be on. I thought I was going to be late for the work thing, but I went for it anyway. And it was just the most, in 10 minutes I had everything rebooked, including my car rental, and life went on. I had extra hours with my family. I got to my work function 40 minutes early, and then a day later I find out I'm getting a $200 voucher, even though they paid for everything. So it just was this beautiful moment that I did have that pause for. And I don't always have that, but this normally would have completely upset me for a really long time, and instead it turned into this very beautiful moment and space, and kind of all the stars aligned. There was no line for the rental car, and my bag was the third one off the thing. Mm-hmm. it was just so beautiful. I just decided to trust. So it's not fear. It's not 3 a.m. But I just wanted to share that because it was really a powerful process of just let go. But I really thank my niece and nephew. They just came in with the big bright eyes. This is where I want to be. Not going to do what I normally do.
Yes.
That's really beautiful.
I'm choose a different way.
And this is a way that comes about in my experience of living with A Course in Miracles day to day. Is I've become addicted to peace. Mm-hmm. And so I keep going back to it. Even when situations get difficult, I just go back to peace and then deal with it from there. If I find myself reaching for the bottle, so to speak, as fast as you can, let me choose peace instead of that noise about the flights and everything else. Let me just peacefully go about handling it. And I'm addicted now. It just works out so much better. I sleep better.
It's inevitable.
People don't get afraid of me. It's inevitable,
it's just,
too.
It's just going to be what it's going to be.
Right, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the process you did is like making, I'm not helpless, I'm not a victim. Mm-hmm. Because, it's overwhelming, there's nothing I can do about this. I'm helpless in this, I'm just going to have to. That's not like empowering. Mm-hmm. But that's, to me, it's a natural flow. Mm-hmm. I can't handle this, it's too much. This is not going to turn out well. How can I salvage anything from this? And just by turning. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not like your niece and nephew are not disconnected.
Mm-hmm. And also, there, whether you win or lose, if you're peaceful, it will be a lot better.
Mm-hmm. It's so opposite of
and
the ego thought.
It's so opposite ego thought.
Opposite,
right?
Doesn't make any sense to the ego.
Right? Ego gears up for a fight and then fights and wins. But it turns out, as you learn in some of the martial arts, they train you in the beginning and say, you need to calm down. When you're going into a fight, you need to calm down, not jack up. So you can see the punches coming. If you calm down before when the fight situation comes along, you can see them step back with their left foot before they punch you. You can see what's about to happen. But if you're so riled up, you're going to miss these cues and you're going to get knocked out. So we're going to practice calming you down in trouble. As they do in martial arts.
That's I did a lot of, I used to karate and stuff, and then you learn all this stuff when I was younger. When I was in Dragon School, we started the spiritual part.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he would always call, well, he would like pick someone, if somebody's taking like scout class, advanced scout class, and then someone that's in advanced philosophy but only had one class, well, he would put them up with the advanced scout because it magnifies in a sense. You're, I would sit there and I'd have to do demonstration like stuff, so the guy comes up and we got guys like Navy SEALs in this class, so he's just, well, okay, we're going to do this, you know, just touch me, do whatever, trying to show how it works, and they're going to smack whatever, I just, no matter, at that point, you know exactly what they're going to do before they do it, because the philosophy puts you in a different space, and it just, and you're peaceful.
Yes.
All the energy is, you just sit back and like this, and just you see everything before it moves.
Yep.
And it's so different. And so when they're talking about that, if you get angry in a fight, you lost.
That's right.
Get mad, just put them down.
Yep.
If you see
it, so this is
a guy, just make them angry.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they do in boxing all the time.
Isn't it? Yeah, get them all worked up.
Yeah, the whole thing is like sitting back trying to psych each other out.
Get the ego on overload and it makes mistakes. You go to peace and all of a sudden there's a little bit of tolerance in there, some patience comes in there.
And there's time.
And then there's more time.
Mm-hmm. I took Aikido for 3 years and you didn't have to think about anything. All you had to do was use their own energy. You didn't get tired except getting up off the floor when it was your turn to fall down. But
and even when you fall down,
you
fall down in a very conservative way.
That's right. Falling down wasn't the problem. Until I remembered Feldenkrais, and then I remembered how to get up without using energy.
Yeah.
So one thing that we're implying as we're talking about this is that even though we're in ego in the world, it's still our responsibility how we see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so we can see it in a way that amplifies fear.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can see it in a different way. And that's our responsibility. We're not the victim. We're responsible for how we see the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we will get what we look for.
Mm-hmm. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's it. Do you see the circle? Okay, let's keep reading. Because how the hell do you do this when the beep hits the fan? What's the practical way A Course in Miracles would guide you through a difficult situation? Here it comes.
Ask to be taught. And do not use your experiences to confirm what you have learned.
Isn't that right down Luann's alley?
When your peace is threatened or disturbed in any way, say to yourself. She may have memorized. This would be my mantra. I do not know what anything, including this, means.
Yeah.
And so I do not know how to respond to it, and I will not use my own past learning as the light to guide me now.
Exactly. What happens next? Keep reading, Stefan.
By this refusal to attempt to teach yourself what you do not know, the guide whom God has given you will speak to you. He will take his rightful place in your awareness the instant you abandon it and offer it to him.
You abandon it, and then he can be heard. But you got to say some words that are just so disempowering to the ego. It's really helpful to disempower the ego at times like this when the world's collapsing on you. Disempower the ego. Step back. I do not know what anything, including this, means.
And that's the forgiveness. I forgive my not knowing.
Yes.
It's okay to let it go.
Yes.
And give it to God.
And I forgive my knowing. Also, you might have some ideas of what you really should do. I forgive that too. I really don't know.
And what we just read, when you're in that frame of mind, mm-hmm. then God can speak to you.
Then you can hear another way.
The miracle mm-hmm. principle, so.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. Take a look while we're on the topic, just because it's so fun. Turn to lesson 51 real quick. Which is somewhere around page 90. 82. Actually, we want to go to lesson 51. Yeah. Workbook 82, lesson number 51. This is kind of exactly where Brian's was taking us. And with that little chat would have you open your freaking mind. How could you justify opening your mind? Yeah. So let's read one of these paragraphs each. Walt, you ready to go?
Yeah.
Number one?
Yeah. Nothing I see means anything. The reason this is so is that I see nothing, and nothing has no meaning. It is necessary that I recognize this, that I may learn to see. What I think I see now is taking the place of vision. I must let it go by realizing it has no meaning, so that vision may take its place.
Boy, just what you said, your body's a distraction from doing your job, the real job you could use your mind for. The body's blocking it. That's just what that says right there.
But you can also use your mind wrongly. You can use the egoic part of the mind.
Yes. Yes.
So.
And the egoic part of the mind makes something of nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then focuses on it. And then 50 years later, you're still thinking about it.
Well, wait a minute. I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Are we talking about thinking here, or are we talking about mind here?
All thinking occurs in the mind. Everything occurs in the mind.
Maybe thoughts is a better word than thinking.
Oh, but you also never think alone. You, in our separated state, we think these are my thoughts. Mm-hmm. I thought them up myself. Mm-hmm. The Course teaches actually all thoughts are shared. Mm-hmm. Are your thoughts shared with God? Mm-hmm. Or your thoughts shared with other than God?
It all depends which part of the mind you use.
Well, right. Who you, yeah. Which teacher you listen to.
Mm-hmm. So the default before Course in Miracles is that the world is where it's at, and the body is the hero of the world. You make the body happy, you have a happy life, everything goes great. People will love you, you'll love them, everything goes good. The problem is that all along the way is huge amounts of loss. Even when you're loving, there's still loss. Mm-hmm. Turns out your loving was taken the wrong way. Oh my God. On and on. The world disappoints this way. So A Course in Miracles is a reset. And it sounds something like this. Nothing I see with my eyes means anything. And you remember Mark said that he heard this phrase come from another Narsaga daughter or something, and they said, nothing means anything, and it doesn't mean anything that it means nothing. What? Nothing means anything, yeah. And it doesn't mean anything that it means nothing. And nothing means anything, and it doesn't mean anything. That it means nothing. So it's like a nice circle of don't worry about it. Don't worry that nothing I see means anything. That doesn't mean anything either. It's like chill out. Nothing plus nothing still equals nothing. Mm-hmm. Worrying about nothing is worrying about nothing. Therefore, it's nothing worth worrying about. Mm-hmm. The reason this is so is that I see nothing, and nothing has no meaning. It's necessary that I recognize this nothing, that I may learn to see in truth. What I think I see now is taking the place of vision. I must let it go by realizing it has no meaning, so that vision may take its place.
Thing you said once that I think is really helpful here is like if you're grappling with one specific issue, you said you could kind of plop it into these lessons.
Yes.
So, you know, my frustration at work, you know, the frustration I see at work means doesn't mean anything. Or
yes.
That you could substitute. And I find that helpful sometimes.
Nothing about my frustration at work means anything. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. It's a great exercise. Okay, paragraph 2, next one. Julie.
Oh. I have given what I see all the meaning it has for me. I have judged everything I look upon, and it is this and only this I see. This is not vision. It is merely an illusion of reality, because my judgments have been made quite apart from reality. I am willing to recognize the lack of validity in my judgments because I want to see.
There it is. Because I want to see. I want to see differently. That's a big step. Please continue.
My judgments have hurt me, and I do not want to see according to them.
Gotta let go of your past. I don't know what anything including this situation means. I've been giving it all the meaning, and I don't like the way it's been turning out. I don't know. I actually don't know. Holy Spirit, you drive. Yeah, Luann, 3.
I do not understand anything I see. How could I understand what I see when I am judged amiss? What I see is a projection of my own errors of thought. I do not understand what I see because it is not understandable.
There's a break for you.
Makes it easier, huh?
Yeah.
There is no sense in trying to understand it. But there is every reason to let go and make room for what can be seen and understood and loved. Mm-hmm. I can exchange what I see now for this merely by being willing to do so. Is not this a better choice than the one I've made?
Isn't that a nice, consistent, gentle teaching? Look, you've been trying to do something you cannot do. Even makes sense to try to understand the world and the game you set up for yourself. So, stop that. And by your willing to withdraw your need for everything in the world to make sense, real sense will dawn on your mind. You'll begin to see through instead of running flat into chaos. Yes.
Yeah, that one can kind of get to you. Right, you're looking, what? It's got to make sense. It's got to make sense.
Yes.
You find yourself doing it all the time.
You do.
And it's like, it doesn't have to.
Yeah.
And if you let go of it, what really happens? You just let go of the idea that it has to make sense.
Yeah, and in the world's laws are consistent, but the problem is that you come from a drive for love, a drive for peace, a drive for unity. You come from that in your heart. But the world is designed not to have love, because love would blow the world's program. The world becomes less successful at being the world if true love is present. So you carefully, successfully designed a place where God and love are actually excluded. But that makes separation work. You get the competition, you get the life and death, you get the up and down, you get the time and space nicely working as long as separation is real. But for that, you have to block the truth of God and love. And you have to start giving everything meaning based on your intimate addiction now to separation. We're talking about entire change. It's mind training, an entire reversal of everything you know. That's why I said you know something.
Yeah, that act of just sending love out all the time. When you first do it, or when someone, you might talk about somebody doing it.
Yeah,
it's always difficult. You can do it, and then you hit stop. Mm-hmm. Somebody hit stop. It doesn't feel like, it feels like something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
You just have to keep doing it until it...
And plus, it's a lie for most people just to do that. It's a lie. To send out love to something they actually hate. It's a real conflict. And they start to hate themselves. They're not standing up for themselves. They're not righting the wrong. Just loving it doesn't fix it.
Yeah. I saw a movie the other night. I'm looking at this movie. And it was this movie on TV the other day. And it was about they're going to go off and get this drug person that's really bad, and the way they go after it's not working. The guy's like killing everybody, killing children. So they go off to get it, and they bring a FBI agent along, they got a CIA guy, and then they got this other guy who ends up, he's the one that's going to go kill this guy. And they just went in and they killed the drug guy. They went and assassinated him, but then you got the FBI lady was like, oh, you have to do it this way, so you see, here's the right way we're supposed to do it. This is the wrong way, and I'm looking at the right, this right and wrong here. And I couldn't see at that moment. I was like, whoa, I'm really different now, because it's the same. There was no difference between the right and wrong. I really could not see it at whatsoever. This, the whole thing don't work. But I was seeing that, and it was like, whoa. I literally, there was no doubt, and I was able to see that duality as being absurd.
Yeah, and that's our huge lessons that come, that the Course in Miracles uses the special relationship to show all the faulty logic, the false love approach.
Yeah.
In the special relationship, trying to get things done with...
And, that we always look, there's got to be that one guy that's really bad, we got to take care of him. You always have that. See, from the university, you say, well, I understand I got to be forgiving, but what do you really do with that? I couldn't really see nothing. It was like some of me and different recent books. I was reading this one book and it had a part in there. And it was like, it just went through it and described how you would kind of do that, what would happen in a way. And I'm like, it was trippy because all of a sudden I go, whoa. And that really was like a huge thing for me, because like, oh, that really is possible.
Remember, the perspective of where you are viewing must change.
Yeah.
This is the essence of above the battleground. If you are in an insane thought system, trying to make it sane. That's insane. You actually have to move your perspective outside of the thought system and look back on it. Now you can bring a true change.
Yeah.
Sanity.
And now I can look at some things that I never... It's like, I would look at it differently, you know. When you look at the good, the stuff that works, you literally cannot see the part. The person can be totally bad, but you have to see what worked. You have to see that best part. And it's you don't look, and when you actually do it,
you it's like... What you're talking about is you need to translate what your body's eyes are seeing as bad and harmful have to be translated to what they really are, even to catch the criminal.
Yeah.
If you have to think like the criminal. You have to understand the criminal's motives to catch the criminal. If you only stay from the on the outside, or, you know, if you stay within the same crazy thought system, you have to actually look at it from the outside.
Yeah.
And now you can see the whole. You can see its circle.
Yeah.
And that's the Holy Spirit's job, is to translate what your body's eyes see up a level to a larger context. So let's turn back now and
back to what?
Let's look at tonight's reading. Let's go to 4:12.
Okay.
And go to paragraph 2. Remember, what we're talking about here is the home of the ego. It serves the ego. The second obstacle is the belief that the body is valuable for what the body offers. And so, who's up to read? Brian, would you hit us with paragraph 2?
This is the value that you think peace would rob you of. This is what you believe that it would
Oh, by the way, so you got to read the last sentence of the previous paragraph to make it all make sense.
Okay. For here is the attraction of guilt made manifest in the body and seen in it. This is the value that you think peace would rob you of. This is what you believe that it would dispossess and leave you homeless. And it is this for which you would deny a home to peace. This sacrifice you feel to be too great to make, too much to ask of you. It is a sacrifice. Is it a sacrifice or a release? What is the body really giving you that justifies your strange belief that in it lies salvation? Do you not see that this is the belief in death? Here is the focus of the perception of atonement as murder. Here is the source of the idea that love is fear.
And all that is to say that loss of body means trouble. Loss of body means the loss of the ability to love. That the only way you can have your atonement is through the body becoming aligned. That's a mistaken belief, and it's certainly natural. It's certainly natural. It's like somebody trying to manage their drinking when they've already lost their job, lost their relationship, and been to the hospital for liver cirrhosis or whatever 3 times this month. Oh, I'll just manage my drinking better. No. You need to stop drinking completely. Don't you get it? This is, the body is valued for what we think we can get from it. And one of the things we believe is that the body helps us spend and receive the coin of guilt. See, guilt's very valuable when you can spot it in somebody else and they're guilty. And it's very valuable to those who you are so pious that you would make yourself guilty in front of the eyes of God to buy your way into heaven. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I am a guilty son of a bitch, but I'm sure your love will find a way. I'm already calling myself guilty, so you don't have to punish me. But I'm sure your love will find a way if I'm remorseful enough for how sinful I am. You'll let me into heaven.
And the idea of sin,
mm-hmm.
it's mm-hmm. A transgression beyond repair.
Mm-hmm.
What you did cannot be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a good definition.
Yes.
A lot of people don't understand that that's really what it is.
The unforgivable mistake. Can't forgive.
Some people say, well, I don't use that anyhow, but then they'll tell you something that's a sin. And it's like, okay, whatever.
Yes.
It's hard to, for people to understand that.
Yes.
You know, my idea about forgiveness is that God, that love and sin don't go together. And if God is only love, and that in my mind that is what God is, mm-hmm. Then God doesn't ever forgive us because God doesn't ever judge us.
Right.
So, and who am I then to say I'm going to forgive anybody? Mm-hmm. Because if I say that, then I'm thinking I'm some kind of a false God.
And that they've done something wrong to hurt you.
Exactly.
Which means you shouldn't forgive them. You should punish them, mm-hmm. according to the world. So forgiveness becomes a little bit of a lie until you get the forgiveness of Course in Miracles, which is actually what you're already going toward, which is you only forgive yourself, your own thoughts. You're not forgiving something out there for what they did. That's a fool's game.
Okay, can I say what my biggest fear is? Because I need to forgive myself for having this fear. And my biggest fear is that I will lose the love of those people that I love.
Death. Yes. Yes, good. Good. You came to the right place to help with that exact fear, because it is certainly an understandable and innocent fear to the body, because in this world love comes from them. You get love when they love you, but according to A Course in Miracles, you will actually have love with them when you give it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're the source.
We're the source of what we seek. And it actually works that way. When you discover the fount of love that is in you, the image I give is that you discover that the fountain is wet because the fountain is giving the water that is wetting it. Love comes from you as the law of God, as states in this book. It is, as you give, you receive. It is only this way you could receive. Because only then is it real enough to you to be known.
So then I guess my second part of that then is, how do I know that I'm loving?
Yes, good. And you know you are loving by how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same as that thing we just read about peace.
Peace. Yeah.
But it brings the same thing.
Yes.
Because what's the difference between love, peace, and all that? It's pretty much the same in the end.
Yes. Yes. And the Course doesn't just leave you there, you know, comfortless with some lofty goal. It actually expels out in detail for you how to know what loving looks like. How to be in circumstances where you will be drowning in the love that you are. Doesn't it? So many ways.
So to take another step on our staircase,
yes. Bring it.
Then can allow us to look actually at some level, that's my thought, ego, whatever.
Yes.
It allows us to look at that kind of previous thought I had.
Yes.
Which was nothing wrong with it in itself.
Yes.
I love my family. I don't want to do something that would separate us.
Yes.
And then to step higher on the ladder to go, whoa.
Yes.
I didn't really see this part.
Excellent. Good. You are the teacher. You're it. I'm here as a pointer, the book is a pointer, Walt's here to point things out, but it's you. It's always going to be you. Which is where forgiveness is always of yourself. It's a very, very self-fulfilling prophecy, everything you ever do. You, Creator, Son, you.
It's a trip to...
Yes.
To be able to, like... try some trust and faith and get out of my own way.
Yes.
And to try to like be open to, I think it's true. I'll believe it's true.
Yes.
It's very possible and I want that to be. Therefore, I'm going to go that way.
Yes.
And realize like that I can make the right choice, the best choice that I can.
Yes.
With
And I'll go back to what you said. You don't have to wait to make the choice.
But making that right choice and then seeing what happens.
Well, that would be great if you could do that. But what you said, I think, is more useful along the way, which is you can look back on a thought you had, a choice you already made, and you can rethink it. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. Huh? You can forgive your thoughts in the past. because you still believe they're real, right? It's a great way to practice forgiveness in the future or even in the present, is to take a few moments and meditate on something that happened. Tell yourself the whole story. And how could I see this differently? How could I have asked the Holy Spirit to deal with that situation? And just relax. And the Holy Spirit is closer to you than your own heart. So it's with you. It sees your thoughts. So you can relive something and say, oh, that's so much more peaceful. And now you can also forgive yourself. You have a way, a better way to handle things. This is a release practice for rotten things that you said or did or should have said or should have done that you didn't. You can use these things with the Holy Spirit in your meditation nice and effectively rather than waiting for the future, which is, of course, you know, prepare yourself and do good too. But I just like what you said because it's a great way to get traction with A Course in Miracles, and it's very practical. Especially because the ego would have you rehearse a lot of these stinking thinking over and over, sometimes for years.
So I want to be loving.
Yes.
And maybe I'm having some thoughts that say, I'm going to create some separation here.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
No, I want to go to myself, go to Holy Spirit. Let me think about that with God's thoughts.
Yes, yes.
What's the truth of this?
Yes, good.
And then, whoa, with some learning, understanding, true unlearning.
Yes,
miracles happen.
Yes.
Wow, I mean, be open to the, how is this possible?
And what's that wow you're talking about? It's what Luann is searching for, which is this uplifting. Is what I love the word enlightenment. You actually feel lighter around a heavy subject. This is how you know you're moving toward the light. Literally, you're lighter. You're lighter.
The untrue thoughts are heavier.
Say again?
The untrue thoughts are heavy.
Yeah, and they're heavy and they're complex.
And so then to be open to the possibility that, and then go, whoa, I'm so glad that my thought wasn't accurate.
Right.
When I checked in with it.
Yes.
Like, whoa, that's not.
Yes.
I had some sadness stored up there. I had some disappointment stored up there.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the truth. Oh, that's just not true. That's just your thinking, your little thinking.
You right?
And it's
yes.
Like, wow. And then the trust grows.
Yes. Yes. I like that word little there. Because when the Holy Spirit's involved, the Holy Spirit is the right mind. The Holy Spirit is a part of your mind that's outside of the insane thought system. So when you access the Holy Spirit, the circle gets larger. The perspective of your little problem gets bigger. And suddenly it's like, oh my God, I was really chasing my tail in a small space there. It really does give you open-mindedness. And so this is one of the attributes of love. One of the aspects of God's teachers, it says in the back of the book. But I think these are 10 measures of what it means to actually to be loving, to abide in love. And this is the list. You are trusting. You are honest. You become tolerant for the right reasons. Gentleness flows because gentleness is the goal. Joy surrounds you because now it's permitted by your trust and your honesty and your gentleness and your tolerance. You naturally go the opposite way of attack. You become defenseless. Ness is real for you. There is no grounds for defense because you are trusting, you personally being honest. And it's contagious in the situation. When you're honest, they're honest. Your tolerance shows they do not need to defend themselves because you're not attacking. Your gentleness is also something that gets instantly respected and met with gentleness.
Can you tell your truth when you're loving?
Oh, yes.
Even if it's...
Mm-hmm.
It's received. It's received better when you tell your truth when you're loving.
My daughter and my granddaughter have been separated now for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very painful, and I told you all how I got past the idea that I could help.
Yeah, right.
So I was having lunch with my granddaughter and having a good time and being, I think we were being very loving with each other. and I felt love for her at that time. And we got into what do I think about this relationship they're having. And with a smile on my face and love in my heart, I said, well, I think you're both idiots. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself later, and she didn't get mad at me. She still acted like she loved me.
Mm-hmm.
And then later when I was with my daughter, I thought, well, I'm going to tell her about what I said to my granddaughter because I don't want her to find out some other way and not get it right. So she stood there, and I said, I was talking to Shanna, and we were talking about the relationship, and I said, and I told her, and I had a smile on my face again, and I said, I thought you were both idiots. Uh-huh. Now, my daughter has had a temper like you wouldn't believe,
uh-huh.
and she can reject you very easily if you say something.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking, okay, I just love you, and I'm going to say the truth, and I said to her, and I think you're both idiots.
Uh-huh.
With a smile on my face.
How was it received?
She stood there kind of shocked for just a split second, and then she said with a smile on her face, well, at least I'm not alone.
Right? Okay. See, yes, the truth was spoken, and the truth was heard, and she has the same truth. She doesn't like the way she's behaving.
I don't think so.
Come on, she knows. Come on. She knows. All right, look at this paragraph. We have a couple of minutes left.
I mean, so that was okay for me to do that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You actually got yourself closer to your daughter because your honesty came to the surface. What you were thinking and what you said were the same. And she could see it on your face and feel it. Okay. And you showed up in person and you did that. And she could see the disarmed nature of that. It wasn't an attack. And if you didn't say it out of a lovingness... If you said it out of some kind of a correction, I'm going to fix those girls and tell them they're idiots, you would have got a much different response from her,
the
old one.
And what's interesting is since I gave up trying to help them with this relationship,
yes.
My daughter's temper has got less and less.
Nice, nice.
She'll have fun, but it's just not...
Indeed.
I mean, she used to flip the finger to everybody that did anything on the road.
Yes.
And it used to scare me to death because I thought someone's going to turn around and shoot her.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gotten a whole lot less.
Yeah. It's one of the things that one of the truths about the ego, and I suppose you can see it in the practical world too, is if you've got an animal that is that's cornered, it's raising its energy level to escape naturally because it's feeling cornered. You take human beings don't like to be boxed either. So the best thing is usually to put them out in a big, fat, open field. Give the animal some space. It'll run for a while. And then it'll kind of calm down on its own. And this is the way you stop giving resistance to your daughter. You stop putting a block for her to bounce off of. And now she's free to move in her own circles and see herself. And that's what you experienced. Yeah. You're her mother. That counts. Okay, look at these some sentences here on paragraph 2. Okay, sentence 4, it says, this, quote, sacrifice that you feel to be too great to make, too much, is to ask of you. Now, is it a sacrifice, this whole body, where you can exercise guilt, where you can exercise all the things that we think the body is important for our happiness? Is that a sacrifice, or could it be a release? You know, honestly, what has the body really given you that justifies your strange belief that in it lies salvation? Has the body really been a nice guide or door through which you could be guaranteed happiness? Mm-hmm. Has the body shown to be this straight path that if you could only get on it, would bring you to some kind of fulfillment? The body? Careful question to ask, you know. You really have to... This is another good thing to take into meditation. But watch where the body goes. Did you realize that what you're saying is that death now is justified? Because the body, one thing it certainly does, among everything else, is it dies. Even Jesus died. His body... So watch what you're pursuing here. Okay, real quick. Turn to text 66 in the front of the book.
That
what?
Death,
yes,
is our way of saying that we're in control.
Yes.
Yeah, and I can kill myself because I can do it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you're in control. If the body was something that God wanted, He owes you for keeping it alive.
Yeah, that's trippy. You see some of these movies and different things where in the end the guy will kill himself, or and then the people try to catch him, they get upset because he killed himself.
Uh-huh.
It's like they had to stop. Like,
yeah,
it's a control thing.
If you change your mind, you could kill it.
You know, it's trippy. You never know.
Well,
that,
but suicide is like denying God.
Exactly. Yeah.
Isn't you beat to the punch.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, no, but that doesn't work.
And yet, God's already planned a suicide for you. Nobody gets out alive. They all die.
God hasn't. We created this world.
Well, even old age, right? You know, 117.
No, I understand, but
yeah.
this,
but not suicide this, that way. Yeah.
No, I just meant that this is. God did not create this. We did.
Didn't even make the world. Didn't even know about the world.
Right.
No, that's right. You're right-minded. Just spoke. That's right. But in the circle that Walt's walking around, is like the old belief was that I am powerful because I control what, quote, God made. Now, we Course in Miracles students know that there's something else going on here. And this ain't God. This is not God's gift to man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The separation. Yeah. So check out back here on page 66. And look at paragraph 4. Who's up to bat?
You.
Devin? Me?
Mm-hmm. I think you.
Okay.
66, you said.
66, paragraph 4. The body is the ego's home by its own election. It's the only identification with which the ego feels safe. Since the body's vulnerability is its own best argument that you cannot be of God. Mm-hmm. This is a belief that the ego sponsors eagerly. Yet, funny thing, the ego hates the body. What? Yeah. Because the ego cannot accept the body as good enough to be its home. Here's where the mind becomes actually dazed. Anybody been there? See, being told by the ego that it is really part of the body, and that the body is its, the ego's, protector, the mind is also told that the body cannot protect it. Therefore, the mind asks, oh my God, where can I go for protection? To which the ego replies, hey, turn to me. The mind, and not without cause, reminds the ego that it has itself insisted that it is identified with the body, that the ego has identified itself with the body. So, there's no point in turning to the ego for protection. You see the argument going on here?
Mm-hmm.
The ego is no real answer to this. Well, because there is none. But it does have a typical solution. The ego obliterates the question from the mind's awareness. Once out of awareness, the question can and does produce uneasiness. The question produces uneasiness, but it cannot be answered because it cannot be asked. Paragraph 5. You up, David?
This is a question that must be asked. Where can I go for protection? Seek and you shall find. Does not mean that you should seek blindly and desperately for something you would not recognize. Meaningful seeking is consciously undertaken, consciously organized, and consciously directed. The goal must be formulated clearly and kept in mind. Learning and wanting to learn are inseparable. You learn best when you believe what you are trying to learn is of value to you. However, not everything you may want to learn has lasting value. Indeed, many of the things you want to learn may be chosen because their value will not last.
Stephen?
The ego thinks it is an advantage not to commit itself to anything that is eternal.
Da 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 da!
Because the eternal must come from God. Eternalness is the one function the ego has tried to develop, but has systematically failed to achieve. The ego compromises with the issue of the eternal just as it does with all issues touching on the real question in any way. By becoming involved with tangential issues, it hopes to hide the real question and keep it out of mind. Ego's characteristic busyness with non-essentials is for precisely that purpose. Preoccupations with problems set up to be incapable of solution are favorite ego devices for impeding learning progress. In all these diversionary tactics, however, the one question that is never asked by those who pursue them is, what for? Mm-hmm. This is the question that you must learn to ask in connection with everything. What is the purpose? Whatever it is, it will direct your efforts automatically. When you make a decision of purpose, then you have made a decision about your future effort, a decision that will remain in effect unless you change your mind.
Thank you. All right, let's have a circle. Don't take a deep breath. Don't do it.
Breathe all day.
Just recognize that your home supports what you think you are. And you're kind of stuck in this dream for a while, associated with the body. We are here together with this book, with this intention of mind, to now give your body what has been leading you to sickness your whole life, and death inevitably now can serve as the quickest means to bring you back to peace, joy, and creativity instead of victimhood. We can do that here. We can do that now. But, and with that comes a record scratch, you would have to be willing to forget everything you have learned to be true. We have to open to a part of our mind, the unseen, that features the unseen, that pursues the unseen. The part of our mind that is dedicated to the spirit awakening. That connection that you have with the eternal is waiting to be connected. So forgive your thoughts of the body for all its importance every once in a while, and open your mind in stillness and ask the Holy Spirit, what would you have me think? What would you have me say? And to whom? And free yourself. Thank you, thank you. Amen.